Boom. Welcome back to the podcast. We're on another episode of the Live Better Now podcast. My guest today, Michael Sartain. Michael, I'll be honest, I've been watching your content for probably like 6 months now. And I just watched your recent podcast episode. I think it was like 2-3 weeks ago with Jeremy Miner, one of the leading sales experts in the industry right now, fastest growing sales expert in the industry. And you guys talked a lot about psychology. And psychology is something that I've been trying to master over the last 10 years or so. And I feel like it's gotten me a long way. But I wanted to get you on the podcast today to dive deeper into that topic. And I want to make sure that the young men or any men that are listening to this episode today are going to get value so that they can change their life moving forward. And I thought you'd be the perfect guest to make that impact.
Today. Awesome, man. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your background and how you came, how you got to Vegas and how you came to be everything you are today, sitting at 90,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Oh, I went 90. I didn't even realize it. That's awesome. So it's one of these things where I started off, I was a, it was in the, I graduated from college, UT Austin in 2000. There were no jobs because MCI, WorldCom and Enron had just gone out of business. And so I ended up working at a strip club for 4 years. I was a DJ there and I ended up being a manager at a second strip club for a while because I had a business degree and, you know, they promoted me to manager, whatever. 9/11 happened during that period. I tried to get in the military. It took me a year and 4 months to get in just because trying to get in as an officer was extremely competitive back then. And, you know, I got in and I didn't want to fly, but they gave me a nav pilot portion of the test. I did really well on the AFOQT and then they ended up making me a navigator. So I was a mission navigator in a KC-135. And then later on, I was an instructor navigator in a KC-135. I flew for about 5 years. And then the last 2 years, I was deniffed because of a medical disorder. So I was working in counterintelligence. So I did that. I mean, that's it. Long story short, like that was a case where me working in a gentleman's club is where I figured out how unaccountable people act and also sort of like some intersexual dynamic stuff. And then me working in the US military, I figured out how very, very accountable people act. And then I saw the difference between good leadership and bad leadership. When I got out, I remember I came to Vegas one time on vacation. I was here. I'm friends with Kenny Smith. He used to play point guard for the Rockets. He's on Inside the NBA. And Kenny invited me to the his All-Star Jam in Las Vegas. I think this is 2007, I think it was. Maybe 2008, somewhere in there. So I come out here to Vegas for a week. And I was, because I had saved up all this leave time. I had not gone on leave. And I spent a week out here. And I just remember this, like the weekend being kind of like, a, you know, super crowded. But I remember the weekday going Monday to like, the Tuesday I went to Jet. Wednesday I went to Tangerine. Thursday I went to Tao. And it was like these weekend nights and seeing the most beautiful women I'd ever seen in my entire life and like literally doing nothing to just meet. Just it was just amazing. Monday night was like the best thing I've ever seen. Like I just think an incredible experience. And it only got better because once Marquee came out and then later on XS and those different places, I just decided, you know, it's like I you know, living in Austin for 9 years, I like going out every night. I loved being social. I love going to the different venues, the restaurant stuff. So I was like, man, I'm going to try all Vegas out. So as soon as I got out of the military in 2011, I moved to Vegas, August of 2011. And I've been here ever since. Part-time I was living in Los Angeles for a while, but I've been here the whole time. In 2012, it was a weird situation. I ended up meeting Neil Strauss at a Skrillex concert. And
okay,
me and Neil ended up becoming friends. And then I invited Neil out to Vegas to celebrate his birthday. When I was here, there's a guy who ran an event company who saw me walking around with Neil Strauss and was just like jaw dropped. Like, what the fuck is going on here? And so I introduced him to Neil. And then I ended up working with this event company afterwards. Basically, they were hosting events like bikini fashion shows. And like we have these things called industry parties in Vegas that don't really exist in other cities. Where basically we had Spring Jam last Tuesday where everybody in the Vegas industry got a basketball jersey with their name on it. And they were playing like NBA 2K in the table with like the Ace of Spades bottle in the nightclub while Tiger's performing. They're playing video games at the dance floor table, right? We have these weird, really unique industry events. So the company I was with, we were throwing industry events. We were recruiting for the bikini competition at the one at, I wasn't at Wet Republic at this time. I was at Hard Rock. And then By some chance of fate, so I ended up hosting one bikini competition at Hard Rock, and I ended up meeting the guy who runs the Maxim parties for Karma. And I just total accident, I end up becoming the host of the Maxim party in 2015. And then that's where I meet the guy who runs Paradise Challenge. And then that's where Steve Fowler ends up asking me to host the Babes in Toyland events. And then from there on, I'm hosting Babes in Toyland, the Teatro parties, Model Citizen Fund, Smash Global. And then I'm hosting, I'm a videographer at the Playboy Mansion. I get to go there because I'm friends with Crystal Hefner. She's one of the DJs at the bikini competition. And then it's just like, I was like, can I bottle this up, this whole thing where I just keep meeting people who introduce me to more people? I go on this reality show in 2014, and then the guys on the reality show take me over to Dan Bilzerian's house, and that's how I met him. It was April of 2014. And then me and Dan become friends then, and then I'm still friends with him now. We do some work together. And I was just like, can I bottle this up? This whole thing where it's like, I just keep ending up in this one fortuitous situation after another, meeting really high status people. And then, you know, at the same time, you can imagine, like, I'm the host of over 50 bikini competitions, like me meeting the most beautiful in shape women in America. It was just very easy. And even if they didn't come compete, I had a reason to message them. I think a lot of people miss this part. It's like, if you're just like a recruiter for the Maxim party, you have a reason to message anyone. And so I started open threads on Instagram with like 4,000 or 5,000 women. And then from there, it was just like, it wasn't even like dating. It was just like existing and going out with 10, 20, 30 girls. So I just say, how can I take all this stuff that I learned as far as networking with high status dudes? And how can I take all this stuff I learned as far as meeting, you know, a really, really amazing women? And how can I package this into something that I can teach in a step-by-step process, very similar to the checklist that I had when I was in the military, but when I was a flyer in the military. And so that's where sort of these checklists turned into what became the curriculum that turned into Men of Action back in 2019. And then we went live with the actual program in October of 2020. So that's basically what's been going on, man.
Amazing. So let me ask you this question. What do all these high status dudes have in common?
There's nothing that they all have in common. That's the thing, because you can be born really good looking. You can be an extremely talented actor or singer. You can be born super rich. Or what's most likely happened is that you came up with an idea that solved someone's problem, and then therefore you became super rich. Right. You didn't come from money, but you eventually you learned a bunch of stuff that helped you solve a problem. Like Elon Musk says, there's a linear you will be paid in linear proportion to the complexity of the problem that you solve. So there's no one thing that's in common. What I will say is this: what they're used to is the way the world reacts to them. And that is, they're used to being everyone acquiescing to everything that they say. They're used to being surrounded by yes men. And then if you don't act that way, if you can literally take the communication style that you have with your close buddy from high school and use that when you're talking to a celebrity, and also use that when you're talking to a beautiful woman, it really translates. It's really interesting, because when I walk around with some of my friends who are, you know, very, you know, famous, I'll notice the way I talk to them is like, "What up, homie?" And then the way everyone else is talking to them, like, "Oh my God, I'm your biggest fan." And one of these things where I kind of teach you to stop doing that. I teach you, you don't give women special attention or validation just because they have big boobies, and you don't treat celebrities different just because they're celebrities. I would prefer, if I meet, you know, someone that I really look up to ask them a question that's thought provoking to them, rather than trying to just be a tourist getting a photo. Does that make sense? I might get a photo too, but like that's something that I've taught, is that treat them all the same and make them talk about themselves. That's one of the key tenets that we talk about in Men of Action, helping people network. And there's just a bunch of different stuff like that. It's like, can you stay cool under pressure? We talk about our in real life, our IRL live event is called immersion. And the reason why we use that term is because the concept of, like, say, imagine you're an 11 Bravo in the Army, your infantry. And what one of the things they'll do is they'll fire live rounds at you, but you'll be sitting behind a berm. And initially it's a shocking situation. You're like, "Oh man, these are real bullets. I could die if I stood up." But what happens after a while is that your heart rate starts to go down, because you get used to the concept of people firing live bullets at you, and you get used to it. You're immersed in the situation. It's also the same thing when you do the cold plunge, or the same thing when you jump out of an airplane for the 7th, 8th, 9th time. You still get the thrill, but it's not quite the same thrill as the first time. Well, if you immerse yourself in a situation where you're constantly surrounded by high status guys and beautiful women, i.e. Las Vegas, then you can get to the point where you're immersed in those two situations and you don't act weird. You don't act different just because of somebody's status.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's so many things that young men can do and men in general can do to start to lead by example and to be cool under pressure and to treat everyone the same regardless of their physical makeup, extent, yeah, how much money they have, et cetera. But like, what are some of the non-negotiables that men must do, whether it's working out, whether it's starting a business? Like, what are some of like the bare minimums that people need to do before they even think about joining Men of Action?
As far as the bare minimums, I mean, we're going to give you these bare minimums if you join, but some of them that I tell people are every minute that you're in the car, every minute that you're in the gym, and every minute that you are eating, you need to be listening to an audiobook or podcast that's getting you closer to your goal. Also, I would learn to listen to those audiobooks at 1.7, 2.0, 2.2 speed while you're taking notes with your notes app and your phone. I mean, if you want to talk about the single thing that's helped me, because that skill that I just told you is the reason why I get people on my podcast, because I do so much research on them. I did a ton of research on Marshall Faulk yesterday before I had him on the show, and you could see like he even was the popcorn story. So Marshall Faulk used to sell popcorn at the Superdome in New Orleans when he was growing up in the Ninth Ward. And you could see it like caught him off guard. He didn't expect me to talk about that story. And so that's one thing that you can do is like, especially if you're trying to get a job interview or you're trying to, like if I knew I was going to do an interview with Joe Rogan, I would listen to like some of his biggest clips that he's ever done at double speed. I'd probably go through like 100 clips. And so I'd have a ton of things that I knew he reacted to that we could have a conversation about. So that's something that I've learned. Being able to just download massive amounts of information into your brain very quickly is one of the biggest ones. The other one is find mentors. That one's a non-negotiable. You need to submit yourself and humble yourself to the point where you recognize if somebody's doing better than you, you need to shut up and listen to them. You need speed of implementation and suspension of disbelief. It doesn't mean you have to completely copy everything that your mentors say. Like you might have a mentor who's like, you know, super successful at business, creates amazing sales funnels, but he cheats on his wife. You don't need all of it. You just need the good parts, right? You just need the good parts. So that's the other thing I would tell you is, the ability to find mentors. As far as the dating thing is concerned, the world would change if men would just take this one piece of advice. Men confuse attention for compliance. So we can't, this idea that pickup artists had for a long time was this idea that you could look at a woman's behavior and tell if she was attracted. And to some extent you can, but often there are false indicators. And if you ever want to see them, just walk into a strip club in New York or Los Angeles or Miami. Women will come up to you who have no interest in you whatsoever and show you indicators of interest, okay? Same thing with like bartenders who are trying to get a nice tip from you. So what are the actual ways that you could tell a woman's attracted? It's through compliance, not through attention. And so the way we talk about this is, men give women validation and attention in exchange for attention. And that's bad. Whenever you give a woman attention and she's done nothing to earn it, your value goes down. Whenever when a woman gives away sex and she's done for nothing, in society in general, not all the time, but in general, her value decreases. And so what happens is as men, we need to just have this understanding that everything that is attention is above the belly button and everything that is compliance is below the belly button. And what I mean by that is often guys will like get a nude picture or some flirty message from a girl and then be like, oh my God, this is compliance. She really likes me. And I'm like, no, that's not compliance. That's attention. She sent that same nude to 40 other dudes. She's not that interested in you. She could take it or leave it. But if she comes over to your place and like makes you dinner, that's her. That's the lower half of her body. That's below her belly button. That's compliance. And if you just reward compliance as a man. By the way, you're going to do this also. You're going to learn in sales training. It's a very similar situation. Oren Claff, he talks about eliminate neediness, maintaining frame control, things like that. When you come to the realization that when a woman does things below the belly button to come to show compliance, means she moves to your location, that's compliance. But when she says words, touches you on the arm, tells you how cute you are, that's just attention. When you can separate those two things, you all of a sudden have the ability to maintain a strong masculine boundary, and it's outrageously attractive to a lot of women because 99% of men that she comes across will not have that boundary.
Yeah. You know, first of all, I love everything you're saying, man. And it makes so much sense. And any man that's listening to this is like, oh, this guy makes a lot of sense. And you know, I want to encourage all those people that are thinking that to go to menofaction.com. And take a look into how you can learn more from Michael Surtain. But also something I find really entertaining, and I try not to watch the news, and I try not to pay attention to mainstream media. I only watch CNN and Fox News now because it's entertaining. I don't really watch it to learn information. I probably shouldn't even be watching it for entertainment value. But, you know, a lot of people would say that, you know, you're, and I'm not saying it because I love you. I love everything you're standing for. I really do.
Sure.
And I respect you, and I'm all about it. But some, and I it's going to be a fun topic that we're going to go to next. Like some people would say like you hate women, and some people would say you're like misogynistic, you know, and you know, the radical side of the spectrum is like the Andrew Tates of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Type of thing. And I'm not comparing you to Andrew Tate, but like, this is clearly like your message and your brand that you stand on. It's like, hey, let's be strong men. Let's work out. Let's make money. Let's not give women attention they didn't deserve or earn. But like, what would you say to those people that would call you that word?
So I don't really have anybody calling me that, because the thing that happens is, cause I get lumped in because I do a show with Rolla Tomasi, and because I actually know Andrew Tate, and because I go on Fresh and Fit all the time, that I get lumped in with them, and they often get called that, but I don't really ever get called that. And the reason why is most of my friends are female. I work with domestic abuse and human trafficking charities. And you'll notice on my show, the thing that's different about my panel show compared to everyone else's is that I know the girls on the show and I'm friends with them. And I try to talk to them from an empathetic situation. My intention is just as much to help women as men. Now, I'll give you guys a piece of advice. If you guys are trying to run a business and one of the businesses is trying to give women advice and the other one is trying to give men advice, one of them is going to make you a lot of money and another one, not people aren't going to listen very often. Female dating advice is like makeup artistry and going to the gym. Like when women give dating advice, and I'm not trying to knock women in general. What I'm saying is female dating advice is often not listened to by women. It's one of these things where it goes in one ear and out the other. Whereas male dating advice has to do with, we have a burden of performance and we have to maintain that level of competency, whether it comes to our job, our physique, our ability to talk to the opposite sex, and our ability to be charismatic. So what I found is that like when I give female dating advice, or when I give advice to women in general on how to be happy, it just doesn't go viral. It goes in one ear, the out the other. I have several women that are in my program and they like it, but in general, it's not that big of a deal. When I give men dating advice, when it comes to women, especially, it's the defense stuff, not the offense stuff. If you give men advice, basically like, hey, throw these huge events, and if you do so, you'll meet a bunch of women, and then those women, you can sort of create a funnel where you can bring amazing women in your life that are like-minded. For instance, I'm big into animal rescue, so I'll have an animal rescue event. I'll invite every attractive woman in the city to my animal rescue event. I'll meet every attractive woman in the city. We'll talk about animals, and then from there, I might be able to choose a really cool partner who's likely isn't a psychopath because she loves animals. And so from that situation, like that's a great way to choose. So me giving men advice on offense, like how to meet women, is great. It's the defense that a lot of people have a problem with. And this is the concept. I'll give you an example. If I were to have there's a podcast out right now called Kill All Men. If there's a podcast out there where it's women warning other women about men, that podcast is lauded and awarded. People do not have a problem with a podcast where women are warning men, warning other women about men. But if there's a podcast where men are warning other men about red flags that certain women have, that podcast is then called a misogynistic podcast, and it ends up on some government watch list. And so it's just one of these things where there's just sort of a double standard when it comes to that. Most of my female friends understand the concepts that I give them. Like for instance, I think, and this is, by the way, the same for men or women, I think when you're in a sexual relationship with someone and you want an understanding of your relationship, someone who isn't attracted to your partner, a third party should come in and help you understand what are the actual dynamics of your relationship from a third party point of view. So this would be a brother, a cousin, a platonic male friend, a father, an uncle, someone like that. I would recommend women all have a guy friend or some male counterpart that can look at their relationship and be like, honey, he's cheating on you. Or honey, like it looks like he's being abusive. I think that would be a really, really great thing to do. And often women, what they'll do they'll have these incredibly strong feelings, and they'll let those strong feelings guide them into dating the DJ or the male stripper, thinking that they're going to change him instead of getting good sound advice from a counterpart who is not involved in it. I also mentioned this, I think is a great piece of advice for women, is that every woman should have a guy friend that they're not sleeping with who's a complete and total ladies man, total player. So she can see what the other side is doing. I recommend for men, every man should have one female friend that he's not sleeping with who's a complete and total slut, who's running game on seven different dudes at the same time. Show the text messages how she's messaging all these dudes the same messages. I think, and so what I just gave you is a controversial piece of advice. What do most people give people advice? Oh, figure out what your love language is and just follow your heart and your passion, and your instincts will never let you down. Girl, your instincts let you down all the time. This is, if you hear these women and they're complaining that their last three exes are narcissists, saying, I need to trust my feelings and my instincts. No, you don't. You need grandma. You need grandma. The reason why grandma always gives great advice is because grandma doesn't have all the hormones flowing through her veins anymore. Grandma can just look at things with experience and dispassionate. Like, she's seen it all. Grandma's seen it all. She's not going to let none of this shit affect her. Grandma's in a good position. So I would listen to grandma. I would listen to uncle. I would listen to somebody who has your best interest at heart, but at the same time, while they have your best interest at heart, they're not being pulled in. Ladies, you know, if you're listening to this, by your, you know, gorgeous 6'3" guy that you met at work, like, grandma isn't attracted to him. Grandma doesn't give a fuck. And so grandma might give you some better advice. And so that's what I recommend people do. But as far as you said before, the whole misogyny brand, it's not something that I really ever get. I do have a few people that come on the show, some of the girls that come on the show, and they'll have a problem because they'll try to present some narrative, and then they don't like my counter to it because my counter usually is based in statistics. I think there are a few people that have an issue with that. And then there's like other things where I talk about when we get into the concept of biology is misogynistic, just in case we're not sure. When it comes it just is. If you have a problem with this, I'm sorry.
Men are stronger than women.
Well, it's not just that, but like, men have a reproductive career that can go from the age of 14 to the age of 70. Women have a reproductive career that generally is going to go from the age of 13 or 14 to the age of maybe 38 or 40. And generally, when you get to 38 and 40, we're talking like a 5% chance of conception. That is something like, biology is misogynistic. It is. When you bring up these concepts, though, you're looked up at. It's like you're promoting hate. The idea that I understand biology is promoting hate is crazy to me. That means math is now promoting hate, right? The concepts where, for instance, if you were looking on dating apps, most men get their most right swipes between the ages of 38 and 44. Women get their most right swipes between the ages of 23 and 25. Those are just statistics that I can show you. That doesn't mean that women don't have value at 33. I had a woman say that to me the other day. It's like, you're telling people that women over the age of 33 are worthless. And I'm like, I've never said that. I said women over 33 are gorgeous. But what I did say is that in general on these dating apps, what you're finding is that men are preferring younger women. And so one of the reasons why they're doing so when they're asked is that those younger women tend to carry less emotional baggage or trauma from previous relationships into the relationship. And so that's why guys like being with them. And so a lot of women will go through a lot of emotional trauma, might be their fault, might not be their fault. And then they take that with them into their 30s. They're like, I'm very comfortable not being with a man. And then they meet a man who wants to date them. And it's just, there's this very boss bitch standoffish attitude that makes it very difficult to be in a relationship. What I just gave you is a scenario that we see every day. It's not, it's like an oncologist. Oncologist doesn't condone cancer, and an oncologist doesn't hate cancer. He just studies cancer. It's the same kind of situation. I'm studying intersexual dynamics. I recognize that we're hairless murder apes and that we have like very, very shallow proclivities. Men and women both do. Women's necessity to find a man who can procure resources, and men's necessity to find a woman who has facial symmetry, hip to waist ratio, and signs of youth. Like, I understand why those things exist. But it doesn't mean I have to condone them or whatever. I don't think we have to be hairless murder apes forever. But man, it's just one of these things that when you propose objective reality to certain people, they can't handle it very well, and then they get offended. Mm-hmm. But I've never, you can go through all my content. I have never called a woman a 304, any kind of pejorative, like a whore. I've never said words like that. I don't feel like that's appropriate because your message gets lost by just being insulting to people. And I'm not insulting to people. And like I said, now since I started MOA, I'd say it's probably 50-50. But before MOA, I'd say 75% of my friends were women. 75% of my friends are women. I enjoy the company. I'm basically David. I'm Hank Moody in fucking Californication. I love the company of women. I prefer the company of women over the company of men. It's a problem I had for a long time. I wouldn't even go. There's a friend of mine. He's a huge television producer. He comes to Vegas one time. He's also a judge at one of my bikini competitions. He comes to Vegas one day. He goes, hey man, let's go grab some barbecue. And my mind immediately went to, wait, are we going to take 19 girls with us to barbecue? Like, I was just like, I was thinking like, well, where are the girls? And I like, I had to stop myself because for a long time living in Vegas, it had warped my brain to thinking I can't go anywhere or do anything unless I have 20 women with me. And it's something I've had to like change, especially since I started networking with some of these high status dudes. It's a mentality that I've had to change. And that, you know, sometimes guys are often, most of the time, guys are great to network with. Now I'll go to dinner. It'll be me and Ty Lopez and Dan Fleischman, and we'll discuss ideas, and there might not be any girls around, and we don't need any girls to be around, right? I often discuss my buddy Lynn Oding. He's director for Cobra Kai and The Equalizer. He's the he, me, and Dan Bilzerian are over at Bilzerian's house, and we're discussing business, and there's no women around. There's no women around. So it's a situation where as a man, you kind of have to understand networking with other high status men is really, really important. Justin Waller is a good buddy of mine. He says it best. He goes, men should be valuable to other men. Like your job is like, we can't make money together. I don't want to be friends. Men should be valuable to other men. And if you can do so, that's a great way for you to level up.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. Dude, you're hyping me up, man. You are hyping me up. Let me ask you this question. When it comes to the dating apps, do you think they've helped men or hurt men? And then vice versa, do you think they've helped women or hurt women?
Yeah. So the thing is, I do not accept, I reject the notion that it's just men and women. So here's the thing. What I say is there's three genders. There's high status men, there's women, and there's low status men. There's three genders. High status men and low status men have nothing to do with each other. They have different life expectancies, different lifetime incomes, different number of sexual partners, different success in marriage, different levels, likelihood of committing crimes. There's a group of 15% of men up at the top. Like, I'll give you an example. I believe a third of men under 30, maybe it's less than that, maybe close to maybe a quarter and a third are virgins. So we're at zero for like the bottom quarter. We'll just say the bottom quarter of men. Then the median number of sexual partners, I believe, is 5, and then the average for men is 15. So we go zero, and then right here around the 50th percentile, we're at 15, just somewhere around 50 percentile, we're at 15 sexual partners. Then men in the top 5% have, I think, between 150 and 300 sexual partners. So let's do the scale again. We start at zero for the first quartile, then we're at 15, and then in the top quartile, we get up to 150 sexual partners. That's large, a hockey gap. Stick. That's a hockey stick. Yeah. What is that? What it means is there's a small group of men at the top who are having unlimited options with women, and then a group of men at the bottom, bottom 85%, that are having next to none. And can we look at other data that supports this concept? Well, one of the things we can look at is on dating apps that the top 10% of men get 63% of the right swipes, the top 20% of men get 83% of the right swipes, and the top 40% of men get 96% of the right swipes. That means the bottom 60% of men are competing for 6% of women, 4% of women. Jeez. It's so inequitable the way dating works right now. So when you ask, do dating apps help? If you're a movie star and you can get on Raya, or if you're a super good looking guy, or if you're a guy that shows incredible displays of wealth, absolutely. It's incredible for you. If you're in the top, the women basically are stating on these dating apps that 80% of men they consider to be below average attractiveness, meaning if you're below that 80th percent or that top 20 percentile, that women consider you a 5 or below. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Which of course doesn't make sense. That if you're in the 80th percentile, you should be considered an 8. By women. Women don't consider you an 8. They consider you a 5. Okay. If the top 20% of men are deemed to be attractive, of that top 20%, 4.5%, so a quarter of them, are so attractive that women actually make the first move. So if you're in the top 4%, 4.5% of men, absolutely dating apps crush it for you. Now, if you're a woman, do dating apps help you? And the answer is no, because dating apps are a way for women to procure short-term sexual access. Well, I got news for you guys. Women don't need help getting short-term sexual access. They don't need an app to do that. And so what you're finding instead on these dating apps is you're finding women a lot of times that have problems. Like you're finding a woman who, you know, divorced, not, like maybe some sort of mental issue or drug rehab or something like that. Or more likely what's happening is when you see a very attractive woman on a dating app, she's trying to get you to go down her OnlyFans funnel. You'll notice they'll be like, hey, follow me on Instagram or follow me on OnlyFans. And so what happens is for that bottom 85% of men, they end up chasing these women, but to what end? We just talked about this. If the top 20% of men are getting 63% of the right swipes, then you're competing for you know, a small amount of women. I don't know if you've seen this one thing. It's on TikTok. This guy does 1 million with an M. He does 1 million right swipes, goes on two dates, and then doesn't, or he meets two women and then he goes on one date with 1 million. He's an average looking guy. He wasn't an ugly dude. He goes 1 million with an M right swipes, and that's what he's getting. Women are often reporting they're going on these dating apps and have no intention of going on dates. They just like the attention that they're getting from other men. So what has this done for women? It's been bad for women also, because what it does to your psychology is you left swipe on 600 guys for every one that you right swipe on. And women start to have this belief that's like, well, I'm getting this attention from these men, therefore I'm better than these men. I could get some of these men to commit to me. And of course, what happens is, if you understand, you know, the concepts and intersexual dynamics between short-term dating and long-term dating, short-term dating is where people, like hookup culture, people are like, I'm going to hook up with this person because they're very physically attractive and I don't really care what happens afterwards. Women choose very attractive men for short-term dating, very attractive, what they would consider to be alpha males, that top 15% of men, those are the ones who get chosen for short-term dating conquest. In long-term dating, women tend to be a little bit more egalitarian. This is where you see the woman, she might actually like have a short fling with the guy she considers a 9, but she might marry the guy she considers a 6 who has a stable job, okay? So there's a difference between short-term dating and long-term dating. That's often lost on women, and they start believing, because they're getting short-term dating attention on dating apps, that they could get long-term commitment from those men. And they'll believe that occasionally they'll right swipe, they'll get on there with an incredibly good looking or successful man, or maybe a celebrity. They'll have sex with the guy on the date and they'll think, because I fucked a 10, that means I could get a 9 to commit to me. That means all these men I'm left swiping on, any one of them I could get to commit. Not recognizing, obviously, that Raya, Bumble, Hinge, and Tinder are used for short-term sexual access. I'm sorry. I'm not saying that there aren't some people that meet there and get married. That's a little bit more OkCupid and eHarmony. That's not the dating app specifically, the right swipe, left swipe dating apps. What you're going to find in those situations is that it's about 95% of the time it's men looking for short-term sexual access. And it's about 5 men for every woman on those dating apps. In fact, you want to know, this is a really funny one. It's about 11 men for every 1 woman in India on dating apps. But you know where it's the worst? If you pay for the boost, it's like 19 men for every 1 woman. For the ones that pay for that boost, when you get into you know what I'm talking about, when you pay for Tinder, yeah. Tinder Plus or whatever it's called. So the dating apps have hurt the lower status men by having them, they get no attention, and it's hurt women by actually putting them in a situation where they believe they can get, what happens is they aim so high for men that they can't get to commit. And then men they can get to commit, they left swipe those guys and act like, well, you know, these guys aren't worth anything. And then they start mistaking, then there starts to become this mismatch where they start thinking, this guy isn't good enough for me, not recognizing, honey, you'd be lucky to get that guy to commit to you, but you think he's too good for you. And then you end up with the lowest number of women looking to get married in history, which I believe is 6 women per every 1,000. So that's the situation we've gotten into. And dating apps are a symptom, and they're also a cause of this situation. So for men up at the top, in that top 15%, dating apps are incredible. For women, I think it gives them a perceived dilemma of choice that causes them to make poor decisions. And for the men at the bottom, they're destitute with very few options.
So do you recommend that men, low status men and high status men, mm-hmm. go on dating apps?
I recommend men don't worry about dating apps. Men worry about bench press max, body fat percentage, running a scalable business, reading 60 books a year, going out on a regular basis and being incredibly social, being around the most beautiful women they can, getting used mm-hmm. to talk to them and immersed to where it doesn't phase them in the slightest, being the social leader of their group, hosting incredible events, raising money for charity through these events, using female influencers and male influencers to come out to these events and help you raise money. Being the social leader,
that's the focus.
And being a leader, the social leader and a leader in general, I focus on that more than I focus on a dating app. Now, do all those things and you dress better than everyone and you got this incredible physique and you do the looks maxing with your beard and you lose the body fat and you get the really cool haircut, then you put that on a dating app, you're going to do better on the dating app. Additionally,
you're gonna crush.
Yeah,
yo, that's the focus. Bench press max.
Yeah,
throw cool events, yeah. raise money for the events. So what are some, this is kind of off topic.
But by the way, when I say bench press max, people don't understand. I don't literally mean bench press max. I mean, just getting stronger in the gym every day.
Of course.
Right.
Of course.
Bench press max is like when you're in high school, like that's the one where you show off to the other, you know, I can bench press 300, you know, that kind of thing.
Getting in the best shape of our life. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
All right. So when it comes to audiobooks, what are some of the audiobooks that you listen to more than once and that you're going to continue to listen to for the rest of your life?
That I listen to more than once. It's going to be the ones at the top of my list. It's going to be Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's going to be The Setup by Dan Bilzerian. It's going to be The One Thing by Gary Keller, The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson. It's going to be Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willick. And Dichotomy of Leadership. And then it's going to be Can't Hurt Me and Never Finished by David Goggins. And then I probably $100 million offer, $100 million leads. And then later on, $100 million sales when that comes out by Alex Hormozi. A new one that I'd probably throw in there is Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell. Pitch yep. Anything by Oren Claff. And then the other ones are going to be like, you know, so there's some astrophysics books. I'm into physics. So some stuff by Neil deGrasse Tyson and then Stephen Hawking. And then everything by Dr. David Buss. So the one that I just finished rereading is The Evolution of Desire by Dr. David Buss. When Men Behave Badly, Why Women Have Sex, The Murderer Next Door. Those books are other things that I would highly recommend people read over and over again. The Ape That Understood the Universe, Alpha God. These are evolutionary psychology books. The Parasitic Mind, and then the I'm trying to remember the name of the two books by Gad Saad. Those are also the other ones that I would go through.
Uh-huh. Love it. So if you're a man out there and you're listening and Michael Sertain made a lot of sense to you and he hyped you up and you feel inspired and you're gonna go to the gym and you want to learn more from Michael, head over to moamentoring.com. He's going to teach you how to make high status friends and attend VIP events by becoming a local celebrity in less than 25 days. That's all it takes is 25 days.
Yeah, it definitely. So there's also, if you guys want to check out the free school group, you guys can go to that too. It's school.com/men of action free. There's a hyphen in between it, every word. Or just hit me up on Instagram and DM me the word action and I'll go ahead and send you the Men of Action, the first four steps of Men of Action. In the free school group, one of the things we give you in the high status 101 course is the you'll see it's a picture of me and Dan Bilzerian. When you click that link, it'll send you to my high status 101 course. We'll give you the first four steps of MOA. And we go over how to fix your Instagram and how to start with your list in order to get large groups of people. Some people have on their refrigerator, they have a vision board and it'll be their Lamborghini, six pack, whatever. You know, same thing you see on the vision board, house in the Bahamas, whatever. My vision board, I don't have a vision board. I have a vision list of people that I want to network with. And it's usually about, in my list, it's usually about 10 to 1. So you'll have 2,000 women and like 200 guys. These are the 200 guys I want on my podcast. And these are the 2,000 women I want coming to my birthday party. Does that make sense? So like that, yeah. That's the way I look at it. So instead of a vision board, I have a spreadsheet with all the people I want to network with. And that's something I teach you in the program.
Amazing. All right, good. Because I got that too. So I already got one step done. So if you're listening, by the way, that's school with a K, S-K-O-O-L. Mm-hmm. I'm going to drop a link in the notes below to follow Michael, to get in his free school group, and to visit his Men of Action website. Michael, I want to thank you so much for your time
today. Of course.
Today and of course, your busy man. Schedule. Is there anything you want to leave the audience with today? Any like action plan that they can start on immediately?
Yeah, your existence is the result of 200,000 years of Homo sapien evolution. And if you want to look at what caused our species to survive, become the apex predator, and have 8 billion people across the planet, you're going to find it's a couple of things. It's men competing with other men for access to women, and men working together in groups in order to accomplish goals. And I believe the apex of the human existence is men accomplishing goals with other men and having a family. And so if you want to learn how to do those things from an evolutionary evidence-based standpoint, and at the same time, anecdotally, meet men who crush it in business and crush it with women, then you should join the program.
Let's fucking go. Michael, thank you so much, dude. Enjoy the rest of your day, and I look forward to networking with you again soon.
Awesome, man. Thank you, Zach.